This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We've got 75 degrees right now and a chance of some heavy thunderstorms later in the day.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street at Bloomberg. Here's Joan Doniger.
Well, Cisco, it may be all about the Fed on Wall Street today and probably tomorrow, too, until Federal Reserve policymakers come out with their expected decision to raise interest rates at the end of their two-day meeting. So right now, investors are kind of keeping things close to the flat line. The Dow is up 6 points, the Nasdaq 12, the S&P just barely above flat. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index has pulled its head above the flat line. CF Industries shares up 4% to lead gains. Now, energy stocks have been gaining on the 25 cent gain in crude oil prices. They're trading at $72.32 a barrel in spite of President Trump asking OPEC nations to stop raising prices during his UN General Assembly speech. The higher prices have come along with imminent Trump administration sanctions against Iran and OPEC's decision to boost output to counter that. Facebook shares had led the Nasdaq lower earlier. Investors were startled by the resignation of co-founders of Instagram, which is owned by Facebook. Apparently, they have been clashing with Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thanks, Joan. On today's Noon Business Hour, President Trump defending tariff policy. We'll see the reaction to that. And also, we're going to be seeing Fed policy this week with a possible rate increase.
October is historically a volatile month. What should investors do? And it's Travel Tuesday. We'll get some secrets for traveling well from flight attendants. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Discussing your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The day may be not far off when you will not need keys or even key fobs to start your car. We're going to cover that in our next segment. Right now, we're looking at President Trump's remarks about trade and the economy before the UN General Assembly today and other economic signals. We're talking with Peter Morici, professor emeritus at University of Maryland and a syndicated columnist in College Park, Maryland. Peter, first of all, today, consumer confidence way high, according to the newest estimate. What does that mean for the economy?
Well, it means that consumers are going to keep on spending money, and it should give businesses confidence to invest.
This was, I think, higher than it's been since maybe 20 years ago.
Since the last century.
The last century, you're right.
It's been lower than this 98% of the time. It's not a record high, but it's darn close.
What are the elements that bring a number like this?
Well, we have very low unemployment. Wages are rising, not as fast as we like, but they would be rising. And people have more money in their pockets because of the tax cut and so forth. It goes to show you, given what's shaping up in the midterms, that a strong economy is not a guarantee of popularity. That comportment matters. Today, the president gave a great speech. It was about as good a speech as he's given. It was very comprehensive, and there was nothing new. It was a bit blunter than you might hear in the General Assembly, but compared to what Donald normally does, it was pretty restrained. I think that he gave a very good summary of where we're at, and I think that there's general support of the things that he is doing. And the basic problem is that women and minorities simply don't want white guys in office right now. And they're not interested in the economy. They're interested in controlling the economy.
As the president delivered this speech, one of the things he said during the campaign and during his time in office, he keeps repeating America first. This was certainly an America first speech right there in front of all these world leaders.
But it wasn't really an America first speech. I think that's an unfair characterization. I think that what it was a restatement of that. He was saying, you know, we put our nation first because we're a unique country, and you should do the same. Basically, over the last 70 years, the United States has gone into international negotiations behaving as if it should be there to negotiate for the other country, to basically enable other people to prosper without enabling Americans to prosper, assuming that we would always be prosperous. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily follow. He was basically saying, you know, we expect you to look out for your sovereignty, expect us to look out for the same. The other thing he's rejecting is this notion of global governance, and the word that he didn't use was civil society. That's the code word for basically the professional left that lives off of foundation money.
So, President, you mentioned the blunt speech today. A lot of this was about trade as well. Are you seeing potential benefits for our economy if the president really continues taking a hard line on this?
I think it depends on how he does it. My feeling is that you can't make progress with China unless you have a concerted effort from the United States and its allies, much as we did with Iran with regard to the first nuclear pact. I don't think, for example, the sanctions with Iran are going to work very quickly because we're not being supported by the Europeans. Likewise, this isn't going to work unless we get support from the Europeans, the Canadians, and the Japanese with regard to China. In that context, you know, as I've said over and over again, I wouldn't be making war on everybody. I had an article that led off the op-ed page yesterday of the Washington Times that basically said a stalemate is likely. My feeling is all the tales of woe that we heard about Donald becoming president, the economy would tank. Remember Paul Krugman saying that?
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. Paul has a way of being wrong a lot, for a guy with a Nobel Prize. My feeling is that tariffs aren't going to have the salutary consequences that businesses are complaining about. What you've got is that businesses don't like a change in the regulatory environment, no matter what it is. Whether it's, I remember when we were liberalizing trade with Canada, the auto companies were apoplectic because they had aligned their production to accommodate Canadian protection, so they would have to realign them now. And I think that's what's going on. I mean, do you honestly believe that Americans can't make their own toasters if they have to?
Peter, always good analysis. Thanks for being with us. We'll hope to have you back again soon. Peter Morici, University of Maryland.
We'll get
Maryland.
Back on that toaster.
Yeah,
later.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. You can keep in touch with Peter on Twitter at PMorici1. Coming up, no more searching for car keys. Maybe you might not need them at all. Just your finger will be enough to get you in the car.
Discussing your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
If you like those high-tech key fobs that remotely start and lock your car, well, you'll likely love what's on the drawing board. Researchers are working on a way to do all those things using your fingerprints. It works on cell phones. Why not your car? Let's talk with Jeff Gilbert, CBS auto reporter in Detroit. Jeff, so using our fingerprint on our car, what sorts of things can we expect to be able to do with our fingerprint?
Well, it's not just your fingerprint. This whole thing is biometric. So they're experimenting with fingerprints, your facial recognition, also your voice, and trying to determine what's next. I went through a demonstration from a supplier, Continental, where they showed where you just sort of put your fingerprint on a scanner like you would have on a cell phone in the car. Will start with your fingerprint, or if they can perfect it, you can even talk to the car and say, "Hi, it's me, start the car." And, you know, the ultimate will be like the new iPhones that use facial recognition. So it's really interesting how fast this technology is progressing.
And all of it, of course, is determined to be more secure and to make it less likely someone takes your car.
Yeah, not just secure, but we're all losing our keys and our fobs and things like that. So it's a convenience factor for the customer. And between now and then, a lot of cars are going to start using cell phones essentially as a virtual key because there's a lot of possibility there. So this is an area where technology is making our lives easier, but you know, when you're dealing with a car, it has to be bulletproof. You know, you can't have an error like you can't make a phone call because, you know, they don't want anybody to be stranded because they can't get into their car because the car didn't recognize them.
How far down the road will this be on sale? And what any other ideas that are just knocking you out?
We could see this in the next couple of years if you know, if it works out. There's a lot of things they've experimented with and they have to make sure it does work out. You know, there are a lot of wonderful technologies out there in terms of connectivity, things of that nature, and essentially making your car a node on the web. And the new 5G technology that's coming to cellular phones is going to add an extra dimension to car connectivity.
Let's talk about some of the things that will maybe benefit parents who lend their cars to their teenagers. Something called geofencing, maybe being able to restrict where your teens can drive.
Well, right now there are systems that do that. Both GM and Ford have systems that give the teenagers their own key, and there's a chip in the key that recognizes the teenager, and it places limits. Like, for example, you can't turn the radio up or even on until you've buckled your seatbelt. And it's not so much you can't go out of the geofenced area, but if you do, it sends a text message or an alert to parents letting them know that you've gone out of this area. So, you know, there are all sorts of opportunities like that. And we talked about keys on cell phones. That allows virtual keys where if you're loaning somebody your car or you have a short-term rental, this is happening already, they send a virtual key for a short period of time to your cell phone.
Oh, good. I thought with the geofencing, I thought like some shopping carts at some supermarkets. At some point, if your kid went on a range,
right,
the car just slammed on the brakes and you couldn't go any further.
Yeah, it's kind of like the force field on those science fiction movies. You know, that they want to make it responsible, but they want to make sure it's safe, too.
Yeah, so what about limiting horsepower on cars? That's actually something that's possible, too, right? So the kids can't necessarily drive 100 miles an hour?
Absolutely. For example, the Hellcat engines on some of the Fiat Chrysler vehicles come with a black key fob and a red key fob, and you have to use the red key fob to get the whole 700 horsepower. You're limited to, I think, a mere 400-something horsepower if you use the black key fob.
And, of course, we'll have News Radio on the radio as well.
Absolutely. I think that's the important thing. Get those radio stations implanted and don't let people change them.
Yeah, just radio.com, pretty much. Anything,
yep, exactly,
on radio.com. I'm a company man. All right. Thanks, Jeff Gilbert. Good to have you with us, as always. Jeff is CBS Auto Reporter based in Detroit. We'll be back with a check on the markets later. Tips on flying from people who do it most. Travel Tuesday. All that's just ahead.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's take a look at the markets, sponsored by Baird. Here's Joan Doniger.
Well, Chris, investors are making no sudden moves today. The Dow is down 5 points. The NASDAQ is up 13. The S&P falling about 1. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is down 0.1%. Sears shares are leading the losses. Well, now that Federal Reserve policy meeting has started in Washington, Wall Street's holding back. Strategists say investors are waiting for confirmation of their expectation. The meeting will end tomorrow with another interest rate hike. They want to hear what Fed Chair Jay Powell will have to say afterward to see if they need to figure out another rate hike come December. Ford and Fiat Chrysler are looking for a happy medium when it comes to fuel economy standards. Both say they want standards that are lower than the targets set by the Obama administration, but higher than the ones that President Trump is proposing. Fiat Chrysler says the company does not want to see standards frozen. Now let's check in with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal. Kurt?
Well, good afternoon, Joan. Grain markets are mixed as we go into the noon hour. Buying beans, selling corn, buying beans, selling wheat being the dominant feature. Beans were higher on positive export news and labor concerns in Argentina. Corn started out firmer due to a 239,000-ton sale to Mexico. Harvest activities running strong across the Midwest. Corn futures unchanged, down 0.25%. Beans up 1 to 2, and the wheat market down 9 to 10 cents. This is Kurt Kimmel, Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thanks, Kurt. The Dow down 7 points with business at 25 and 55. Live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Joan Doniger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. And these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
October is historically the most volatile month of the year on Wall Street. We'll see what might happen this year. Travel Tuesday, we have tips on flying from the experts.
Some big merger activity. We'll take a look.
What news we are watching. President Trump is at the UN today. What's he saying about the U.S. economy?
It is sentencing day for Bill Cosby.
On Wall Street, the Dow down 13, NASDAQ is up 12, the S&P is down 1, oil is up just a fraction.
Possibility of some gusty thunderstorms in the Chicago area later in the afternoon and the evening with a high today of 82. Right now, it is 75 at O'Hare.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Time for a look at what's moving Wall Street. We're joined by Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at B. Riley FBR in New York City. Art, everything pretty much hovering right about the flat line today. What do you see going on?
Yeah, it's interesting. And the flat line is okay when you have this much news going on. You've got the president giving a pretty dark speech at the UN General Assembly, and that didn't move markets much. I think we've got oil that's higher, which is good for the energy stocks, but bad overall if it continues this pattern. So I think that's got some people paying attention. I think the financials are doing much better, and that's a group that hasn't really moved in, you know, almost the entirety of this year. And that's because the yield on the 10-year has finally sort of found a neighborhood above 3%, and I think that's good. And then a massive amount of M&A activity over the last couple of days, which I think is a good sign. It's a sign of confidence, and certainly it's interesting that it's in a varied industry. It's not all one group, and I think that's a real good sign of the strength of the broader market.
Speaking of confidence, consumer confidence numbers came out today. The index is near the all-time high of the numbers that we've seen over the years. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, we're running out of room at the top end of that chart for both of those sentiment indexes. When we look at the Michigan confidence, which we get at the end of the week, and that's at an all-time high, at or near an all-time high, the consumer confidence number at or near an all-time high. And what does that mean? It means that employment level is relatively high, right? So we've got a lot of people working. Wages are creeping higher, not as fast as we'd like, but, you know, on a year-over-year basis, up almost 3%. And we've got, you know, all else being equal, low interest rates and relatively affordable gasoline. So a lot of the inputs into the American consumers' lives are still pretty positive, and I think that's reflective in what they feel about the future. We saw that in back-to-school shopping. Hopefully we see that in the holiday shopping season. But we've got a consumer that's out there and confident and continuing to spend money.
Where do you see opportunities on Wall Street right now?
Well, Chris, the three things I think, you know, and for the next 12 months or 18 months that you really want to focus on, I think financials are finally making a turn here. I think the financials are going to do better with a rising interest rate environment. We're clearly in that. I think that's a good sign. They're undervalued. They're second largest sector in the S&P 500 and basically flat in the year. So I think there's a lot of growth there. Healthcare is my second favorite sector heading into the end of this year, the first part of next year. I think there's some wonderful things going on in healthcare, and I don't think we've put the right price tag on it. I think things are getting improved a little more smoothly through the FDA, and I think there's a great deal of opportunity in healthcare. The third is technology, but old-school technology. I like a lot of the names that are throwing out big dividends, like a Cisco is a great example of that. The things that I would avoid continue to be those stocks that look like bonds, the bond surrogates, whether it's the staples, the utilities, or the REITs. Rising interest rate environment is not good for that sector, and I think it's time to unwind those positions.
Let's talk about some of the M&A activity. You mentioned that still seems healthy. One of the big deals being announced, Arby's parent company buying Sonic. What do you make of this deal? What's behind it?
Well, it's interesting. There's a very competitive market in the quick serve restaurant chains, and to get to scale, it has made sense in the past for somebody like an Arby's to take on somebody and immediately have more scale when you're competing with real giants in the Wendy's, Burger King, and McDonald's landscape. So to me, I think it makes sense. They've got the cash to do it. The time is probably right. It diversifies the offering stack that they have, and probably makes a great deal of sense in terms of the synergies and costs that they can wring out of the combination. So I'm not surprised there. That goes a little more hand in glove than another one of the deals that was announced today that makes a little less sense to me.
Well, let's talk about the high-end retail, Michael Kors and Versace.
That's the one that's a head-scratcher to me, Chris.
And that's what I was wondering. Why?
Yeah, that's a head-scratcher. And I just can't figure out where that sort of lines up because, you have two distinct different end user, right? Two distinct different consumers. So Kors is that sort of affordable luxury, that achievable luxury, that attainable luxury. So it's, yes, it's higher priced goods, but it's more of a coach, right? And Versace's on the far other end of that spectrum. So I don't know if you can actually combine those two things successfully. They're going to certainly give it a try, but it just feels like there's a big distance in between the typical Versace client and the typical Kors client. And we're going to see what they look like when they try to get them in the same place. And that just feels like it's interesting combination for sure. Not one that I would have predicted, coming into the year, and let's see how that one plays out.
Now, you feel like this M&A activity is actually a positive sign of how Wall Street is going, not businesses feeling as though they have no choice but to merge and begin buying things up?
Well, I look at that as more of a vote of confidence for what's going on both in the economy and what valuations look like in the marketplace. So, you know, understanding that if you've got balance sheets that are flush with cash, you get three opportunities to do something positive with that for your shareholders. You can buy back your shares, and we've seen a lot of that. You can issue dividends, and we've seen a lot of that, or you can make accretive acquisitions that make sense for you. Oftentimes, it's better to buy something than it is to build something and get to scale immediately, and I think that's what we're seeing in a lot of the M&A activity we've seen. So I'm less concerned that this is the sign of a mature market and mature economy, and I'm more actually impressed with the vote of confidence that the number of M&A transactions we've heard over the last 30 days has increased on a month-over-month basis, and I think it's a real vote of confidence that both the economy and the market are doing quite nicely.
And do we continue to have the kind of performance that we're seeing Amazon and Apple and the big, huge tech companies?
Well, it's interesting. Technology seems to have been taking a breather for a couple of reasons. I think some of the sort of the data sharing technology, social media type technology companies have taken a pause when we get concerned about the government looking at new regulations and them having to go up to Capitol Hill and talk in front of folks in Washington about how they run their business. And I think that we've seen a lot of those, you know, Facebook, Twitter type names, Google, you know, coming under a little bit of pressure. And then the other pressure in technology that we've seen is in the semiconductor space, because you know, KLA came out with a warning about 3 weeks ago, and some of the semiconductor names that have been high flyers have pulled back. I think it's healthy that we're seeing a pullback in technology right now, because that money is going somewhere else, and that rotation seems to be into the financials. We're, you know, finally getting a lift in the financials over the last couple of days, and I think it would be a very healthy thing to make a new high in the S&P 500 with financials as a leadership versus technology, which is what we've seen over the last couple of years.
Art Hogan, thanks for the analysis. Art is chief market strategist at B. Riley FBR in New York. Ahead, Travel Tuesday, the experts share their secrets on hassle-free travel and hotspots.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Kaler Luggage. Nobody knows about flying better than the people who do it for a living. We have some of their secrets, and we're going to share them with you. With us now to talk about it, Joe Brancatelli, editor and publisher of JoeSentMe.com, based in New York City. Joe, thanks for being back. First one that we want to talk about is bottling it, actually bringing water with you. Tell us about that.
Well, what the flight attendants know, Cisco, that all travelers should know, is that the water you can get on a plane is highly suspect if it's coming out of what they call the tanks, because they're hard to clean. They've been shown to have all kinds of bacteria in it. So always drink bottled water. Now, I'm on a plane. Never take this, you know, water being poured out of a pitcher or anything like that. I'm a little less skeptical than some about things like, you know, what about coffee? What about tea? While it is very hard to boil water on an aircraft, it's just harder. The temperature actually goes up that you need when you're flying. I think you're generally safe with hot beverages that have somehow been boiled, but definitely do not drink the water that they provide.
Okay, so bottled water, that means, because of security, you got to buy that in the airport. That's why it's pretty expensive, obviously. They charge you a lot on the back end when you land.
Or on the plane.
That they sell the bottle. Most of them sell bottles on the plane now. Okay.
You can. They do have to do that. The other thing I think you need to leap right into from water is the food on the plane. Flight attendants and flight crews generally live difficult lives. It's not fun. They don't eat airline food when they can avoid it. They're always, you know, hounding the sites like Eater and TripAdvisor and Yelp, looking for nearby bargains, or even places like Thrillist. Everybody's now pulling together lists of the best airport dining. I mean, you have a place like O'Hare, Wicca Park, terrific sushi. Who would expect it? Who would have thought it 10 years ago? But there is better food to eat than what they can give you on a plane. And certainly bring your own things like protein bars, nuts, dried fruits. That'll give you energy and relatively low calories and low sugar.
This is an interesting one. If you are wearing a well-thought-out outfit, if you look professional, you can get a free upgrade just because of that.
Chris, I'd love to say, boy, that happens a lot, but it doesn't. In fact, it almost never happens on U.S. airlines. Occasionally it will on an international airline. That said, I can tell you a story. A woman I know was going to London, and there was an oversale situation in coach where she was booked. the gate agent looked her up and down and says, do you have heels? And the woman says, yes, in my bag. She says, put them on, and she ended up in business class. But the fact that I can tell you that story shows you how rare it is. But dressing more professionally could help once in a blue moon. It might happen to you.
All right, Joe, thanks so much. Thanks for joining us today. Joe Brancatelli, editor, publisher of JoeSentMe.com in New York. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. Still to come, the most volatile month on Wall Street is just around the corner.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Strap yourself in. We're just days away from October, historically the most volatile month of the year on Wall Street. So what about this time around? Our guest is Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com in Washington. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Mark. October definitely has a bad rep. Does that stand up this year?
Yeah, well, it turns out that I think there's some misunderstanding. A lot of the bad reputation that October has is they think that it's a bad month for the stock market. Actually, September historically has been the worst month of the calendar, though so far this year, September doesn't seem to be all that bad for the stock market at all. But October's reputation that is deserved is the one that says that it is a particularly volatile month. And indeed, my analysis of the historical data suggests that it very much deserves that reputation. In fact, by various statistical measures of volatility, October is, I think, almost twice as much, twice as volatile as some other months of the calendar, and significantly more than the average of all the other months. So it really holds up that we should expect more than the usual amount of ups and downs in the market during October.
And why is that? Is there any particular reason?
Well, you know, I mean, that remains more of a mystery. There was one clue in the data. It turns out that the market changes its major trend, the underlying direction of the market, more often in October than it does in any other month of the calendar. In fact, about twice as much as you'd expect if you were just flipping a coin and expect randomness to suggest which month of the market might change. Now, that doesn't help answer the question. It just means it postpones the mystery. Why would the market changes trend more often in October, but who knows? But historically, going back to 1900, there have been more trend changes in the month of October than in any other month.
Now, in the long run, maybe it doesn't matter, but in the short run, is that good for all these outfits that process trades? Volatility is good for them, right?
Absolutely, yeah. The people who really benefit from volatility are probably the people who get transaction costs whenever you trade. That doesn't mean that you or I have to participate. Just because of volatility doesn't mean you have to, you or I have to decide to make changes to their portfolio. The only way I would say that it's probably a shrewd idea for us to take advantage of volatility is to put in, if let's say that there's a group of stocks that you're interested in perhaps buying in your portfolio, put in buy orders well below the market. You'll only get a couple of them, but their volatility actually means the stock price will drop down lower than it would have otherwise, and you might pick up a couple at really good prices. And by the same token, put in sell orders way above the market for some of the stocks you currently own that you're thinking of maybe selling along the way. The volatility, of course, volatility is upside as well as downside, might allow you to unusually good prices to sell them at.
Good advice, as always. Mark Hulbert, thanks for being with us. We'll get an update on the markets from Bloomberg next.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. We're wrapping up the Noon Business Hour. This portion sponsored by Kaler Luggage. Let's check in with Joan Doniger.
Well, Chris, President Trump's speech at the United Nations helped hold stocks lower when he said that when he talked about trade with China. But investors are keeping an eye on the Federal Reserve meeting in Washington. And right now, the Dow is down 49 points. The Nasdaq is up 8. The S&P 3, those are gains and losses. Well, gain of 0.1%, losses of about 0.1% to 0.2%. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg down 0.1% because of Sears shares. And Verizon is cutting costs. The company offering early retirement packages to thousands of staff. All management employees are eligible to a part of a $10 billion cost-cutting effort. With Business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Joan Doniger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.